You know, on Wednesday, someone had come to meet me, and his question was, he had a practice of 2 hours in the morning of Kriya and meditation, which gave him tremendous peace. But he said, once that is over, in my daily living, I'm a mess. So he said, for me, it is like those 2 hours are net practice, but when I go out into the field, I get clean bowled. Work troubles me, relationships trouble me. So his teacher suggested that you extend the practice from 2 hours to 3 hours, and it didn't work. Now the thing with non-duality, with understanding, jnana yoga, is this is your life's, your life is your practice. Morning to night is the field on which you are playing. And this shows, this understanding shows you the way to live in equanimity, peace and harmony through relationships. So there are a lot of teachers, especially from the yogic tradition, who are very clear that the practice is the way, which it would be if it is followed diligently. But non-duality's gift is understanding in daily living, application in daily living through relationships. So it should not be discounted so easily. But my own experience and the lineage of Jnana Yoga masters proves that the harmony, the peace of mind in daily living is delivered through the understanding.
Understanding is awareness.
You could say. So, you see, because everyone's life experiences, you will not know what's going to happen the next moment. You cannot know. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. Now, with that understanding, one has to live one's life, because that is reality. That is why what that boy said, that my practice is not delivering me the peace of mind in daily living, because like most of us, he is buffeted between pain and pleasure, which does not give peace of mind. So true understanding will automatically lead to the thinking mind being quieter. When the thinking mind, which does not anymore go into the dead past or an imaginary future, starts dissolving or shrinking, the light of awareness, as you say, of presence, as Maharaj would refer to as conscious presence, shines. Because that is always there. But there's this veil of the thinking mind of the ego, which is covering it. So it really needn't be found, the awareness needn't be found, because it is there. What has to happen is the thinking mind has to get disengaged. And it gets disengaged through the understanding that nobody truly does anything, which is in the Bhagavad Gita. That is the gift which is given. Because when the thinking mind is disengaged, what is disengaged? Blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance. Can you imagine if all that is taken away? What is left? Peace of mind. Something so simple. So peace is actually the absence of all that which disturbs peace. Again, it's not something to be found because it is always there. But what has happened is because of the sense of doership, the human being has become the human doing. The human being has become the human became or the human becoming. But it's the human being. The being became the doing and the became and the becoming. Be still and know I am God means be still, which is your true nature, is the knowing that I am God, not God as a form, as the conscious presence. I was looking at the power of now after many years, because we were on the subject of Rinanubandhan, which I keep bringing up. And I'll read out three lines which explain this. And we'll look at it in the light of doership. When you are fully present and people around you manifest unconscious behavior, you won't feel the need to react to it. So you don't give it any reality. Your peace is so vast and deep that anything that is not peace disappears into it as if it never existed. This breaks the karmic cycle of action and reaction. You teach through being, through demonstrating the peace of God. You become the light of the world, an emanation of pure consciousness. And so, you eliminate suffering on the level of cause. See, because the relationships which bring us conflict are greatest teachers, because it's an invitation to look at why conflict is there. And with the understanding that nobody truly does anything, we are all instruments of the divine. The way God has made us, the way God has made us in terms of genes, conditioning, and nature. You are no longer an individual with a sense of doership, arguing with another individual with a sense of doership. So what could have been an earlier situation of action-reaction, the Rinanubandhan takes place because it is perpetuated by me blaming or condemning or trying to prove to someone that my way is the right way and the way I see things is the right way. So it's like the tennis match going on between two individuals with a sense of doership. Now, if any one of the two have the understanding that the other person's point of view is as valid as mine. Why? Because his point of view is through the filters of his genes and conditioning and nature, and mine is through mine. There's no question of mine being right and the other being wrong. There's a total acceptance. There may not be an agreement, but there's a total acceptance that this instrument's point of view is as valid as mine. The argument stops because it takes two hands to clap. If one hand does not participate, there's no clapping. So the Rinanubandhan gets mitigated. We have to go through life with certain relationships because that is the way life is. But when the understanding steps in, you will see that your reaction to people, be it family, loved ones, strangers, colleagues, there's a shift. There's a dramatic shift, and you will realize this in retrospect. For instance, if someone in my office is not performing well, there's a full understanding that the person is performing according to their capacity. There's no finger pointing and what are you doing? Pull up your socks. Are you stupid? You need to perform more. This is ridiculous. Now, is that person suiting the organization or not is a decision which has to be made, and then the person has to be spoken to and told, look, these are the benchmarks, these are the targets. Please try your best to fulfill them. But there's a knowing deep down that it will happen only if it is meant to happen. So this removes the sting which is generally found in relationships.
But every given situation you try to understand that, the understanding increases.
Yes, you see, this, like it is said, like my guru would say, never discount even an intellectual understanding, because it starts sinking slowly. And you go through a process called the flip-flop. Sometimes, you know, you'll go back to your old ways, then you'll come back to the new understanding. It could be a process. Sometimes the transformation is immediate. But it is like a slow poison for the thinking mind. This teaching creeps up on you. See, when we came into the world, we didn't come with a lot of attributes which we've imposed on ourselves and on others, and judgments. We didn't come with that. Why do you want to go with all this? What is the point of being accomplished in certain siddhis, breathing techniques, if you can't bear certain people? What is the point?
There is this expectation that a flip-flopping should go away.
Of course, certainly. But there is the full knowing that that will happen when it's meant to happen. Let's say, what is your experience with the in daily living, how would you say you have benefited from the teaching?
As you say, when you look back in hindsight, the reactions, responses, you'd be amazed. It's almost like now a different being is being witnessed. Then it's quite astonishing. Over the years, I've known Gautam since about 7 or 8 years. And now, I mean, you know, events that would have probably shaken me up 3-4 years ago, today, after it happens, I go, okay, that's quite wonderful. The other day I told Gautam something which was borderline funny. I said, if I've listened to you, I've not always been happy. But if I've not listened to you, I've always suffered.
Someone sent me an image, I think it was on Facebook, so you can forward it. The image is of two cats which are really lounging in a very lazy manner. You know, one is on its back like this and the other is sleeping. And the line below says, I have named my two cats thoughts and prayers because both are pretty useless. Because mostly our prayers are prayers. Not prayers, they are begging. God give me this, God give me that. The true prayer, as my teacher said, is a prayer of gratitude. But we feel that we know what's best for us, so we start praying for those things. Ramesh had once said, I think towards the end of his life, maybe Suresh might recall this, his prayer which arose was, Lord, give me a state of mind in which I would not want anything from anyone, not even from you, which means a total unconditional acceptance of what is, not what should be, what could be. And as I read recently, someone else was mentioning, the same force which took care of you in the mother's womb, which nourished you, fed you, protected you, that same force is operating through your life. But where did you lose the trust? So this points to being connected to that source. And it points to how we get disconnected from the source. But sometimes it's too simple. People don't like simple things. The mind cannot handle simplicity.
Remember something, can I share?
Sure.
Yesterday I was watching yesterday or day before his video. And he said, it's so simple that you don't have to think. And that, you know, that you don't have, there's no thinking involved. It's something that is beautiful, I think. Violent words. We don't need to think. It's just, but it's very deep if we actually, you know, like to reach that simplicity, we have to go through this complexity.
See, but that is the power of now, is actually. You cannot do anything to be in the now. The now is the absence of the one which wants to do something to be in the now, which means the absence of the thinking mind. The absence of the thinking mind is being in the now. I mean, right now, if there's no thought which comes into your consciousness, you're in the now. What happens is the thought gets extended into thinking by the ego. The ego takes delivery of the thought and stretches it in the duration of time into thinking. That means you lose your connection with the now. So nothing need be done.
We are
being played. We are not here to play, we are being played. But I keep insisting on coming back to this concept of consciousness is all there is. Because you see, it is echoed in Shirdi Sai Baba, a man, a master, a sage who was known for his miracles. Unfortunately, his core teaching was Advaita, which people did not really grasp because he was reaching the simpler mindsets who needed the miracles in their lives. And we worked on a book of Nisargadatta Maharaj called Meditations with Nisargadatta Maharaj, where he said Shirdi Sai Baba was the absolute. Not that Sai Baba needs that validation, but my point is his teachings on this subject. Once again, we were flipping through this because we were doing a book on Sai Baba. And I found three lines here. So, you know, next time the thinking mind puts up an argument with this subject, maybe we can see what Sai Baba has to say about this. So Sai Baba said, you need not go far in search of me. Me is M caps me. Barring your name and form, there exists in you as well as in all beings a sense of being or consciousness of existence. That is myself. Knowing this, you see me inside yourself as well as in all beings. If you practice this, you will realize all pervasiveness and thus attain oneness with me. If you have the full understanding that the same consciousness is speaking through me and listening through you, we appear as two, but the reality is we are not. If you can look at all your relationships, especially the ones which have given you pain, with this understanding, that is what Sai Baba is referring to. Is there any point in living a life where your peace of mind is restricted to a practice, but your daily living is a mess, your relationships are in a mess? Is there any point in selectively loving certain people and hating others? So beautifully expressed by Sai Baba. Ramakrishna used to refer to the story of Prahlada, who was tortured by none other than his father. And so the Lord was so impressed by Prahlada's austerities and penance, he stood in front of him. He said, "My child, I am just amazed by your dedication to me. I'm going to grant you a boon." He said, "I don't want any boon." He said, "No, I insist. I insist that you ask for something." And you know what he asked? He said, "Lord, I have one request. May no harm come to those who have tortured me." Because, as Ramakrishna said, he had the full understanding that it was his destiny and it was God, not the individual, who was meting out the suffering. So, to wish harm upon someone is to wish harm upon God. So, you know, when people speak about this today, their objections, the mind sometimes, you know, says, "No, this is ridiculous, etc., etc." But look at what the masters, Ramakrishna, Sai Baba, the Bhagavad Gita, it's echoing the same thought. So one has to look at one's daily living in this perspective. And it will be extending beyond human relationships. Animals, objects and thoughts, relationships with all of these. My cousins, they had a dog, I remember this, and her mother was not too fond of the dog. She was fond enough, but she was like pretty clear that the dog had certain do's and don'ts. So one day she walked into the living room and the dog was sitting on the sofa where she used to sit. So she got wild and she said, "Get out of my chair, I'm going to kick your ass out of there." My cousin heard this and she said, "Mama, how can you say this? After all, he is also a human being." That's compassion. As Eckhart would say, a felt oneness with being. In fact, in that same passage, he covers that. You may remember that we talked about the dual nature of true compassion, which is awareness of a common bond of shared mortality and immortality. We are all going to the same place. We are going home. At this deep level, compassion becomes healing in the widest sense. In that state, your healing influence is primarily based not on doing but on being. Everybody you come in contact will be touched by your presence and affected by the peace that you emanate, whether they are conscious of it or not. So what is your, what brings you here?
I read that Power of Now.
Achha.
I'm doing that course. I read that online new course that they launched.
Uh-huh.
And I read that book a few years back also, but I read your passage also, your preface.
Right.
But somehow this time when I read it, I thought that I must reach out to you.
Are you enjoying that course?
Very much.
And you feel it has impacted your daily living?
Most definitely.
That's the gift, you see. When we had met, I think this was in, I don't remember this, year 2000. Eckhart had written a nice quote here from the Maitreya Upanishad. He says to Gautam, "Even as fire without fuel finds peace in its resting place, when thoughts become silence, the soul finds peace in its own source. Even as fire without fuel finds peace in its resting place, when thoughts become silence, the soul finds peace in its own source. This was in October 2000, when he had the luxury of writing for individuals. He wasn't that known. Which is again the silence of the thinking mind. What are the silence? The I am. It's so beautiful.
So I am is a silence mind. I is a thinking mind.
No. I am is conscious presence. I am Asha is identified consciousness, which is the way we operate in daily living. Because we are individuals, we have to operate. But I am Asha who does this, and Nimish is Nimish who does that. Then the conceptualization begins, that I am doing something and he is doing something. So the ego is not the problem. It is the sense of doership which is the actual Maya. Because for the manifestation, the nature of manifestation is duality. Black and white, rich and poor, beautiful and ugly, up and down, back and front. That is the nature of manifestation. Me and the other. But when the sense of doership, which is so ingrained in the ego, is there, the me and the other becomes me versus the other, which is also the will of the source. It's not our doing. That is the divine hypnosis. That is the Maya. I consider myself the subject and the other the object, and I pronounce judgment after judgment upon the object without realizing that I am the object for the other, which means both of us are objects. In manifestation, both of us are instruments. That is what Ramesh would call the true meaning of universal brotherhood. That we are all instruments through whom the same consciousness functions. So that subject-object relationship, which is based on a sense of doership, disengages. You will no longer want to convince another of your point of view. That need will drop. Certainly, you must state your point of view because it's a point of view. It reminds me of one conversation. There were three of us having a cup of tea at CCI. And the topic of discussion was a dress a girl was wearing, was sitting a bit far away. So one person insisted that the dress was yellow, and the other one insisted it was a light green. No yellow, no light green, no yellow, light green, yellow. And looking at this, so I said, look here, to you it's yellow and to you it's light green. What does it matter? Because everyone is seeing it through their own filters. Maybe color, whatever filters in the eye in this case, it's okay. So you don't need to convince anyone that that's light green or yellow anymore. To you it's yellow, to the other it's light green. You'll try and state your case that, you know, this is the way it is, but then it drops. You will not also give others advice unless you are asked for. Why? God knows best. God knows best. Who am I to give advice freely, unasked? My guru would say, never give advice unless you're asked for it.
Is the unless that Nisargadatta Maharaj speaks, is a recurring theme in this book. And inquiring into the I thought that Bhagavan also says, are they the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But for us, understanding through our experience of daily living will give us that. It doesn't have to be sitting just for a slot of time and practicing self-inquiry or whatever it is. I mean, after all, Maharaj was a householder. It's a lineage of householder gurus. Very pragmatic. And you know, as Vimlananda said, which I loved, was, what's the point of having exams where the children know 6 months before that they have to prepare for the exam to get good marks? He said, life is only about surprise test. Life tests you. It's a surprise. Then you know whether the student has learnt or not. Then you know. But unfortunately or fortunately, Advaita and non-duality does not give you a certificate at the end of the course. You do a 2-week program or a 5-week program, you get a certificate which you can put up. Level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. Here there's just level 0. No certificate. But would you trade your peace of mind for anything else. So you have to give your certificate to yourself. Your own validation is your own life's experience. And the Guru shows the way. Guru means consciousness, not an individual. Guru as an individual is a representation of that consciousness. Guru actually means, the actual meaning of the word Guru is spiritual weight. It actually means heavy. And then there's the Gu and the Ru, which is the remover of darkness. Consciousness is the Guru. When someone asked Ramesh, "Are you my Guru?" You know his reply? He said, "It depends." So the man was confused. So Ramesh said, "It depends if you are my disciple. If you are my disciple, I am your Guru." The Guru will not say he is a Guru, because for the Guru there is no sense of separation. But for the disciple there is a stage where the Guru is God in human form. That is the meaning. Unfortunately, there is a lot of baggage now associated with the word Guru. Some people make fun of the word. But Sadguru Jaggi Vasudev had said something very nice when he was asked on TV that is a Guru necessary. So he said, see, when we are children, our parents are taking care of us. When we go to school, we have teachers who show us the way. And now when we are driving, we have navigation systems which show us the road, GPRS. So he said, Guru is GPRS, Guru positioning system or something he called it. Because this is the journey of life. This is the journey of life. Why does one have to feel that one doesn't need a Guru? Even Ramana Maharshi has stated that, yes, in his case it was very different. But when he was asked, is a Guru necessary? He said, yes. Maharaj has also said that, till a point. Because the Guru is consciousness. The Guru is not a crutch. So with this understanding, what you see happening is the stories which are created in the mind start dropping away. Eckhart uses that term, me and my story. There are so many stories running parallelly in our minds. Look at all your relationships. Have a cup of coffee and just witness the stories created with each relationship to see the sense of doership either of the other person or me in that relationship. And then these stories, which were wheels upon wheels upon wheels going on here, start slowing down. That mind space getting freed up. It's all right, is the natural response which arises. Theek hai. Ye bhi ho gaya. It's okay. Okay. And later on you see, wow. That is the light. You're walking down the street one day and you say, wow, there was nothing going on in my head. Maybe some working mind related thoughts that I have to get to here by 4 o'clock, or I need to send the car for some servicing, which is fine. But that, And then you're in a position which can be described in one word, which is written on his t-shirt. Chill. Be chilled and know I am God. If anyone argues with you, just point. You don't even have to speak.
That's a certification on you.
I think it was Wayne Lickerman, I'm not sure. But when he had met Ramesh the first time, he had gone with a t-shirt or something which said, shit happens. And Ramesh said, that sums it up. What can you do? Nobody gave you guarantees that life is a bed of roses. Yesterday I met a friend at the club. I think he must be now 65 years old. Lovely man. And he would come to Ramesh's satsangs. Not too regularly, but he would come, stand at the back and go. So I don't know how the topic came up, but he was talking about how strong he had become. So then whenever things went wrong with his friends who are now, you know, getting on in age, or someone's sick and then he has to take them to the hospital, and he's the guy, he's the go-to guy. Like if something goes wrong, he is given a call. So I said, when did this begin? He said, when I was 13 years old, my father told me life is not a bed of roses, and I am going to show you and train you in that. And when the father's family started passing away, he would tell his son, who is my friend, please go and do all the arrangements for the cremation. He said, I ran from pillar to post, getting the death certificate, organizing the wood in those days. He said, you will not believe it, there was 1 year in which 8 people I knew passed away. And that was my life's learning about the transient nature of things. And then he said, a friend of his had met Nisargadatta Maharaj. Then he passed on. So when my friend went to her house, he saw I am that lying there, and she said, now this guru is no more, but you go and meet Ramesh. So he said, when I walked into that place, I heard only one sentence. Ramesh spoke for an hour, but only one sentence stayed in my mind, which was, out of the billions and billions of species on the planet, the human being is one, and from that species, you are one. That is how significant you are. And he said, for me, it ended there. That is how significant you are. The total acceptance that pleasures are transient. Everything comes and goes. You yourself will come and go. The I am comes and goes. Your whole foundation is impermanent, is here for a limited span of time. But our stories are so real. We don't want to shift certain structures in our lives. And as Maharaj would say, the true peace is what you were 100 years before you were born, what you will be 100 years after you die. That is the reality. That is the reality. That is why he would say the closest one comes to that is in the deep sleep state, because in the deep sleep state you don't know that you exist. And the most peace is the peace of deep sleep. If anyone enjoys deep sleep, they're enjoying the absence. Isn't that fantastic? And as he grew older, he would say, when his time was coming to an end, once or twice I heard him say, what's the problem? If I told you you're going to go into deep sleep now, from which you will not wake up, would you really be worried? So he said, I look upon death as that. But in our waking state, where we are functioning as a separate individual, identified with a name and form as a separate entity, that is what the sages are pointing to. You have to live your life in daily living. And therefore, the me is not the problem. The focal point is the sense of doership which is being addressed. That is when Ramakrishna says, you know, Mother, I am the machine, you are the operator. Or he says, give God the power of attorney. Ramakrishna says, give God the power of attorney. So have you been to see Eckhart in any of his talks? Or he had come in 2002. You did? So we have all Eckhart fans here. We went to Thiruvannamalai. We went up to Ramana's caves.
There was a small anecdote I was doing just 2 days back. There in Thiruvannamalai, it was the night of Mahashivaratri. And Sarvanash Bhagavan, that you know, please explain the Lakshmimurti Stotram to us. And the one, it was maybe 7 o'clock in the evening, and he said, we all come after an hour. To 3 to 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody sat in silence. And then Bhagavan told us, hey, now that all of you are married.
Fantastic. There was a very powerful yogi in Varanasi called Vishuddhanand. It's fantastic stuff. I had read his biography. Now, he had mastered a science called the Surya Vignan, the science of the sun. So he had this power where he had this total clarity that anything in manifestation, any object in manifestation, is made up of a combination of 360 rays of the sun. Now, he had mastered this art of creation because the sun is the source of creation. So what he would do in his gatherings, someone would gift him, let's say, some mithai or something, and he would take it in his hands. Sometimes he'd hold a magnifying glass and he'd do some work on it, and it would transform, like a box of mithai would become a bouquet of flowers. Somebody got him some flowers, and he held them in his hand, and he shook them like that, and a bird came. Paul Brunton, who wrote A Search in Secret India, who made Ramana Maharshi popular, went to Vishuddhanand. There was a record of that, and he produced a bird for him. It is there in Vishuddhanand's biography that Paul Brunton has come, and this is what is happening. So Vishuddhanand said that everything in manifestation comes from the sun, from different permutations and combinations of these 360 rays. Colors, for example, the primary colors come from the white light. Everything is color, right? And then it moves into a process. So I was discussing this with my friend who's an alchemist, and I asked him one question. I said, if everything comes from the sun, we are here because of the sun. That's pretty clear, because the food you eat cannot grow without the sunlight. So the pran shakti of the food is being ingested by the body is thanks to the sun. It's just that we don't look at it that way. That is how much we are indebted to the sun. But my question to my friend was that, would this not mean, if we go by this science of Surya Vignan, would it not mean that all of us are congealed light? We've been created out of light. And his answer was, that's it. So when you hate someone, you're hating light. You're hating congealed light. You're judging congealed light, you're blaming congealed light, you're condemning congealed light, you're jealous of congealed light. And Anandmayi Ma had asked him, she said, Vishuddhananji, aap to itne bade yogi ho, you're such a great yogi, why are you doing all this tamasha? I mean, he'd do crazy things, you know, like if the door was open, his hand would extend like 12 feet and close the door and come back. So she asked him this. He said, Ma, but what to do? They only come for these things. What I actually want to give them, they don't come for. Which Sai Baba had the same complaint. But look at this fantastic science, which I had not heard of before. I mean, the idea of speaking about this is not to, it's just to show the reality that we are all from the same source, literally. Nafrat kisse hoga bhi. If I had not read The Power of Now, we would not be here.
Probably.
Even me.
The universe works in mysterious ways, which is that same force which took care of us is taking care of us now.